two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Peace and Power family, welcome to Hard Knock Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Kalonji Changa, sitting in for Brother Davey D. As always, we are held down in the booth by our producer, Anita Johnson. Today, we are diving into a crisis at the intersection of the First Amendment and federal overreach. We're talking about the targeted arrests of journalists Georgia Fort and Don Lemon. Just weeks ago, right here on this program, I sat down with Georgia Fort to discuss the tragic ICE-involved killing of Renee Nicole Good. And we also talked about the broader implications of why Black people can't ignore ICE. This morning, that conversation became chillingly prophetic. Federal agents arrived at Georgia's home with an arrest warrant stemming from her work covering the protests at St. Paul Church, where ICE officials served as a pastor. She wasn't alone. Don Lemon was taken into custody in Los Angeles for documenting that same event. When the state begins arresting the storytellers, we have to ask, who is next? Joining us to break down the legal and journalistic fallout are two titans in the field, Martin Reynolds, who is the co-executive director of Maidern Institute, and Daryl Lamont Jenkins, who is the executive director of One People's Project and editor at Idavox. We're happy to have both of you today. We're going to get started today with our friend, Martin G. Reynolds. Martin, how are you doing today, brother?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm alive on arrival. I feel like we've said this before, but you
yes.
know we're back.
Feels like we have.
Yes, sir. We're gonna get right down to it, Martin. You know, today, like we said, the world knows about these arrests. As a journalist, what does this mean to you? You know, the arrest of two prominent African American journalists. You know, right here on this soil, we talk freedom of speech. What's your take on it, Martin?
According to this statement from the Department of Homeland Security, it said that Mr. Lemon was charged with conspiracy and interfering with the First Amendment rights of worshipers. And so this is in alleging this some sort of a coordinated attack here. And obviously, I mean, the Maynard Institute is a journalism training organization dedicated to ensuring that all people have front door access to the truth. And we focus on the work of supporting journalists of color. Our programs are open to all. But as a former managing editor and editor of the Oakland Tribune, this is a very telling moment. And I appreciated deeply what you said about how when the storytellers begin to get arrested, right, then what does that mean for the rest of us? Holding truth to power. And from what all I could saw of what Mr. Lemon was doing, he was talking to people at this church and seeking to get their responses, asking questions, at times pushing back on their responses, which is what responsible journalism is. And this is not just an attack on journalists. And journalists don't have any additional rights than any other person out in the streets, right? We are simply conduits, often working for news organizations and have standards that we must follow in truth and fact-based reporting. So we don't have any additional rights than anyone else does. We have the right to be in a place to witness, to interview, just like citizens do. And so a moment like this, when the federal government comes after a clear journalists who are known, respected, reputable, endeavoring to, and there's different forms of journalistic discourse. Some is more confrontational, others is more opinionated, some is more sort of straight down the line. And it's not up to the government to determine what is legitimate journalism. That is up to the standards of a particular organization, a particular individual, if they're independent, and also their peers and how they are obviously ultimately regarded and those who they seek to serve. And so I'm deeply concerned by this, as is the wider journalistic community. There's been a statement put out by the National Association of Black Journalists, which we signed on to, in addition to many other journalism organizations, such as the Committee to Protect Journalists, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, Asian American Journalists Association, Trans Journalists Association, National Lesbian Gay Journalists Association. I mean, the list goes on, because we all know that an attack on the free press is an attack on democracy. It is an attack on a free society, and it cannot stand.
I definitely appreciate you answering the question the way you did. And I'm looking at this, and you know, you mentioned democracy. Is this the true embodiment of democracy, or is this more like an authoritarian governance?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, folks should really look to the words of Maria Ressa, who is a Nobel laureate and the founder of Rappler, which is a Filipino publication. And she was explicitly attacked by the Duterte regime. And Duterte was the former president of the Philippines, who went on a tear, killing tens of thousands of Filipinos and attacking the press, and particularly Ms. Ressa. And Ms. Ressa, who has been spending time between the Philippines and the United States, and was at a philanthropic journalism conference just on Friday of last week. And she talked explicitly and powerfully about what is happening in the decline of democratic freedoms. And that if we as a society and as journalists covering a free society do not push back, these rights that we are relinquishing in this moment, they don't just snap back. They don't just come back like a bungee cord with a new administration, assuming that that even happens. I mean, there's all manner of things are on the table, and we are seeing it. And it feels to me like this country, so many in this country, are taking these democratic freedoms for granted. And what this Nobel laureate is telling us, what this journalist is telling us, is that we cannot make these assumptions. We cannot simply capitulate, as we are seeing. If you've seen what has happened, particularly in the journalistic space in corporate media since the start of this administration, the level of knee bending, capitulation, settling lawsuits, for example, that by all legal accounts would have been won. And in part, some of this has to simply do with wanting other deals to go through and not be at odds with an FCC. So there's some real ethical dilemmas here that are happening. And there's some real lack of courage that is happening. And so I would say what we are seeing here now, these are not the actions of a democratic leaning government. I mean, these are the actions of a government that is leaning towards authoritarianism.
We are live and direct. This is Hard Knock Radio. Kalonji Changa filling in for DVD. And once again, we are on the Pacifica Radio Network. And our guest is Martin G. Reynolds, co-executive director of the Maynard Institute. Martin, love the way you answered that question. I want to remind folks that these warrants were initially rejected by a magistrate judge for lack of probable cause before the DOJ pivoted to a grand jury. What is this prosecutor shopping? Tell us about the intent behind these arrests.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I'm not an attorney, even though I play one on television, but no, I mean, I'm not an attorney and not a legal scholar. So I would be reticent to sort of speak to the legality of it. But what I will say, and I do think it's an important question that you ask, is in terms of how is this a justifiable use of federal force? And it is quite chilling that he was arrested by, both of them were arrested by federal agents. And you know, what stands out to me here is there would have to be an assertion, according to the Department of Homeland Security, that there's a conspiracy in interfering with the First Amendment of parishioners. And I think what we have seen with this administration is a complete fabrication of facts that we all can see. I mean, as we saw the shooting of Alex Pretty, and the Secretary of Kristi Noem gets up there and says that these people are brandishing firearms when they're clearly not, when you have government agencies intentionally putting out false or misleading information. So to me, it's less about the legal reasoning behind it, because as we have seen, when this administration and its tactics have been questioned in court, more often than not, federal judges have thrown out cases, pushed back, declared that, you know, ICE, for example, in certain jurisdictions, or that the National Guard cannot be deployed. So the legal reasoning to me is less important as the message that they are seeking to send, which is to silence, which is to have the very institution that is essential to a free society, which is a free press, that we should be scared. And I'm going to say we are not. And I'm going to say that the press in this country has taken some time to wake up and to sort of steel itself against this onslaught of oppression that we are seeing. And I'll tell you why, and then I'll stop, is because for many of us, in certain sectors of the press, we've always been taught to sort of approach things journalistically objectively, right? That you have a level of divestment from the issue and you're merely looking at it and seeking to assess the situation. But there comes a time where objective journalism doesn't exist, by the way, but there comes a time when you have enough evidence, a preponderance of evidence, to understand that what is happening is unjust, and to therefore report from that perspective factually, accurately, but from a lens of what you have seen. And so I would say that these arrests are a reflection of a larger issue, and journalism must meet the moment and be courageous in what it's seen.
No doubt. We appreciate that, Martin. We have about 2 minutes with you. I want to ask you, in your work with the Maynard Institute, you focus on fault lines. How does the racial identity of the journalists and protesters involved influence the severity of the federal response we're seeing?
It's a great question. And I think, you know, the fault lines framework, for folks who don't know, is a framework that Bob Maynard, the former editor and publisher of the Oakland Tribune, the first African-American owned a major metropolitan newspaper where I had the pleasure of working, and was one of the co-founders of the Institute. And he talks about how we all see the world through these lenses of race and ethnicity and tribe and class and gender and generation and geography, sexual orientation, and other elements of identity. And how you align across these social fault lines shapes your perceptions. It shapes your biases. It shapes how you move. It shapes how you see coverage. It shapes how you see issues. And it's why that two people can look at the same issue, think about this immigration crackdown, and come away with very different perceptions about what they see. And so when you think about journalists of color who seek to report on marginalized and attacked communities, and then they are the ones who are arrested for doing that work, it can't be ignored. I don't know what the intentions behind, you know, what's in the mind of this administration, other than it's deeply troubling. But I think that what we see here is that it's why it's essential that there are journalists of color and those of diverse backgrounds who report on these issues, because there's a lived experience and a sense of understanding and connection to communities that are under attack that is essential when framing a story. And so often we've been told to divest our identities from the storytelling. And I think it's essential that the identity does come into play as you are thinking and having a sense of empathy for community that you are seeking to cover, which is why diversity in journalism is so essential. Fact-based reporting is key, data is key, but so too is having a sense of understanding and connection to community that you are covering, because it provides you a level of empathy, of understanding, and of context that journalism has to include if it's going to be credible.
Right on. We thank you for joining us today, Martin Reynolds from the Maynard Institute. We appreciate you coming through, adding your 2 cents. Again, that was Martin G. Reynolds from the Maynard Institute. Coming back, we will be joined by Daryl Lamont Jenkins. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back at you, Hard Knock Radio on the Pacific Radio Network. Again, I'm Kalonji Chalmers filling in for Davey D.
Sometimes the riot is a quiet one. Well, the battle is to love yourself and function in society where voices of reason are muted by anxiety, like gaining notoriety is selling your soul. So we tend to go no deeper than the shallow water level, trying to keep us overhead in the face of all the slurs and the stares, mentally frozen.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Before we move on to the next conversation, I want to let folks know that Georgia Fort was released today, and we wanted to play an excerpt from her speaking at a press conference this afternoon. Stay tuned.
First of all, I just want to thank community. I want to thank community for being here today. Thank you. Thank you for showing up. Thank you. Thank you to my legal team for showing up and for representing me. And to the media, thank you for standing in solidarity with independent journalists. I know as an independent journalist, I have challenged us to move forward as an industry. But the fact that you guys stood up for me today shows me that we are moving together. And so to all the media who made a statement on behalf of me, thank you so much. Yes. As I reflect, as a journalist who has worked in media for more than 17 years, I leave this federal courthouse today with one question. Do we have a constitution?
Or not?
I should be protected under the First Amendment, just like all of the journalists who I've been advocating for, too. I've been advocating for mainstream media journalists who have been brutalized for months. Do we have a constitution? That is the pressing question that should be on the front of everyone's minds. And so to everybody who showed up today, thank you. Please continue to support the other people who are being charged. Obviously, because there's ongoing litigation, there is not much that I can say beyond what I'm saying now. But amplifying the truth, documenting what is happening in our community is not a crime.
Listen!
And the questions that were asked a few weeks ago on a Sunday morning by concerned community members, those questions still need to be answered. And as a journalist, I am committed to continuing to follow the story until their questions are answered.
And we are back. This is Hard Knock Radio on the Pacific Radio Network. I'm Kalonji Chalmers filling in for David D. And I had to go to the tri-state area because, you know, we needed to let you all know that, you know, that's how we do around here. So we went up to Jersey and found my man, Daryl Lamont Jenkins. You know what I mean? He was here. He said he was looking for a button. I don't know what that meant, but he's here now. Daryl Lamont Jenkins is the director, executive director of One People's Project. What's happening, Daryl? How you doing today, brother?
I'm doing all right. Sorry to be here for these kinds of situations, but we got to talk about them. So let's do this.
No question. So you may have heard me speaking to our brother Martin a few minutes ago. And one of the questions I'm going to pose, one of the same questions, because it's so fresh, the arrest of one of the most famous black journalists of our time, Don Lemon. You know, like him, love him, or leave him alone, you know, we can't deny that he is an international figure and also one of the strongest Emmy award-winning independent journalists on the ground, our sister Georgia Fort, who joined us right on the station a few weeks ago, a couple weeks back. I want to ask you, what does this thing mean to you and journalism as a whole, being a black journalist?
Well, I would take a look. I would remind people that my website, Ida Box, is named after Ida B. Wells. And she basically speaks, there's a famous line that she has, that we actually have on a t-shirt. The way the right wrongs is to turn the light of truth upon them. And that's really what he was doing. And that is what they're fighting. When we deal with the other side, when we deal with the Trump folks and MAGA and the white supremacists and all of that, they know that we are pretty much putting that light on them. So they are doing everything to undermine that. And that means they're going after every right that we have. I mean, they know that they're violating all kinds of rights with what they're doing today to Brother Don. And they don't care. They don't care. You take a look at the fact they're going after our First Amendment rights. They're going after our Fourth Amendment rights. They're going after our Second. They never touch the Second until we are involved. And I think it's really important for us to recognize not only that truth, but also the fact that we got to do something about that before they actually do some serious damage to us as a people. I don't think they'll be able to. I don't not think that they're going to cause any real harm to anybody that they arrested over the past couple of days. But the fact that they're trying to, the fact that they're able to get this far, says that we got to put ourselves in a position to make sure that not only are they are not able to do this again, but no one is able to do this again. So we got a fight on our hands. For all those folks out there who always talk about how what's going on with ICE and immigration, anybody's out there saying that this is not our fight, well, it's their, it's their fight. We are their fight. So now it has become our fight. It's always been that, you know. It's a very, I mean, I can get lit up whenever I start talking about that particular issue. But the fact of the matter is, we got to step up and we got to make sure that this goes but no farther. Seriously.
No doubt, no doubt. We're in serious time. I'm looking and I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, we previously discussed Renee Nicole Good's case. We discussed Alex Petrie's case. We discussed Keith Porter, the brother who was killed on New Year's. I want to ask you, how do you feel the federal government is using the prosecution of these journalists to distract from the investigations into these deaths?
I think there's a whole lot of things that they're trying to distract from. But in many respects, I think that's definitely is going on right now, because it's really an embarrassment to this. They are losing ground off of from what is going on. But it's not going to work, because people are angry with what's going on in Minneapolis right now. People are fuming over what's going on. Nothing they do other than pull out is going to make a difference. They want Trump and his people to come to get out of Minneapolis and stop this nonsense. If anything less, it's just going to gin everything up. And this is what they decide to come up with. This is just making people angrier, even angrier. So they're not helping. They're really not helping themselves with this arrest and with any of the arrests, especially when it's not going to amount to anything in the long term.
Again, checking out Hard Knock Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network. Our guest today is Daryl Lamont Jenkins. Daryl, you've seen many cycles of political intimidation. How should the activists and independent media communities shift their security and documentation protocols in light of these federal warrants?
Well, there's a reason why they're going after our Second Amendment rights. I mean, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it, because the truth of the matter is, that's a part of security. However, before we even get that far, we have to be mindful of the fact that we do have ways to protect ourselves, and we just got to be mindful of the fact that we need to. Also, we haven't brought this up, at least I haven't brought it up yet. I'm talking now, but what happened to Congresswoman Ilhan Omar?
Yes.
What happened to her and her being attacked? Now, it was great to see her going after her attacker, but the truth for the fact of the matter, the thing we got to focus on is the fact that she had been attacked. Right. Just a couple of hours after Trump went after her. Right. And, you know, it what Trump does is basically a dog whistle to all of his supporters. And that's what we saw the other day. One of the things that's also important to remember to notice is that almost to a person, not just Trump, but all of his little sycophants have been trying to say that that attack was staged. It wasn't staged. The man is going to go to jail for it. And the fact that they have to keep saying it like they're parrots says to me that they know they messed up. They know they messed up, and they're afraid of something that we are going to do. Right. I want to keep that fear going. I think we all have to have that fear. I'm giving that fear. So one thing to say is that we are on the right track when they do things like that, but we have to stay on it. And we also got to basically turn up the heat, because they still haven't left Minneapolis. They still haven't shut down operations there or anywhere else. And that's what we're looking to do.
No doubt. Daryl's like Bernie Mac. He said, I ain't scared of you mothers. But anyway, these two black journalists, do you feel that it was coincidental that they happen to be black journalists? Or do you think it's just, you know, business as usual and imperialism has no color?
Well, I think that, I mean, if it was coincidental, it was a convenient, it was a convenient one. I could tell you that, because they have been trying to, as my father would say, jug at us for a while now, whether they're trying to remove Black Lives Matter off the streets, or what they just did in Philly, removing the exhibit in at Washington's house that pay tribute to his slaves. When you are talking about black people and this administration, you're basically talking about them looking for a way to start a war with us. The biggest thing that they have a problem with is the fact that we're not taking the bait. We don't need to. But when you have arrests like this, now the things have, you know, stepped up a bit. We got to do something. We got to make sure that we are protecting ourselves in the long run, even if we know what they're trying to pull. So the only thing that I would say is that we would just have to be responsible and measured in the way that we respond, and we'll be fine. We know what's coming, but we also know how to deal with it. And we also know how to teach everybody else how to respond.
You've been checking out Hard Knock Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network. Our guest, Daryl Lamont Jenkins, we want to thank you for joining us. Unfortunately, we've reached our time. Daryl Lamont Jenkins, Executive Director of the One People's Project. We appreciate you coming through, adding your 2 cents. Again, I'm Kalonji Changa filling in for main man Davey D, Anita Johnson on the boards. Till next time, we are out. Peace.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN, at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan, Kim. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Yeah. Come on.
Check out.
Why every knob is stick they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat to the belly from the steel gray beats. Say please. I'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to the lovers I need with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Let's go. Hey, it ain't Davey D.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best.
in the West.
Yes, Coast.
Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Welcome to PNN, Poor People's Revolutionary Radio. This is Muteado Silencio con Voces de Migrantes en Resistencia in studio with fellow formerly Housele Popo and Poverty Scholar, Tiny.
They're stealing indigenous babies again, locking them up in their deadly pig pens, splattering trauma on their innocent heads, promoting terror, because that's what they do. The orange monster and his sick friends, instead of face the Epstein rape files again. They stealing it and putting them in cages. They stealing babies and putting them in cages while the rest of AmeriClan hides their eyes in these capitalized digital pages. And the perpetrators are spurred on with their sick, racist rages. Yeah, this is PNN, not CNN, people. Welcome to Poor People's Revolutionary Radio, where the truth is always unsold, unpot, unpimped, unplayed, every day in a stolen, occupied America KKK.
From the occupied Dakota's lands to Yelamo, Minneapolis, to La Mission, settler terror continues and organized resistance is powerful. And today's Poor People's Radio broadcast, we begin with two warriors speaking about upcoming prayer vigil for relatives that we have lost through the violence of ICE and polarized wars, then onto local politics of war on the poor people right here in Occupy Yelamo with violent sweeps every day and violent cuts to the services that are supposed to support poor and houseless people.
We know that so many of our relative warrior comrades are on those occupied streets of Dakota and Ojibwe lands, including First Nations relatives who have been caught up in this current police and ICE snare of the settler terror. We also just want to remind relatives that this system and this occupied land has been killing Black and Brown and Indigenous bodies from the beginning of the theft of Turtle Island. But now it's coming at us, whether we in the street, whether we in our homes, whether we anywhere. And also, to be real, they kill and they own. You already know the Orange Monster and this particular iteration of the settler government is violent and genocidal. And we are here to resist that every day in every way that we can as poor and houseless, Indigenous and Black and Brown peoples. Tonight, Friday, is a powerful vigil for all our relatives who've been murdered by this genocide. We're gathering at 5 p.m. The ceremony is going to start at 6 on Bernal Hill, a.k.a. Alex Nieto Hill. And that's why we're blessed to bring in our relatives from F12 Unity. Welcome, Doctor. I'm Drew and Mike. What's up? We can start with either one of you. This didn't start with the Orange Monster.
I would say it's just a continuation of the homogenization that these pilgrims started 450 years ago. And they're just picking up where their ancestors left off. As soon as they made it to California, they've been eroding away the indigenous people. And now they have reset their sights on eliminating people with melanin and people indigenous to America and people of color that aren't indigenous to America. What their agenda is to eliminate Black, Brown, and there's actually a lot of Asian and Arab and African people being targeted and eliminated through this process. So it's just a continuation of the homogenization that white supremacy is attempting to finish in the United States.
Mike,
Yeah, we're seeing a remix of it. It's Colonization 2026. We're seeing everybody affected by it, and we are navigating and staying afloat from this technological consumerism and all this entertainment. We're actually seeing through it all that we all are being affected, and it's hitting us all.
Going right off of what Mike said is that it's at a point where it's impacting all groups. They tried to frame it initially as segregating from the border and acting like this was a target against Latinos, as if nobody else were to be concerned. But first off, if you have a compassionate heart and you recognize that these are orders made by white supremacy, then you are already vigilant to these initiatives. However, now that the siege is underway and bodies are being locked up, bodies are being sent away, bodies are being left dead in the street, we're realizing that their scope isn't just relegated to immigrants. It's impacting the entire nation, entire community, and Minneapolis is indicative of this because in Minneapolis, they're killing brown people, they're killing women, they're killing white people. They also killed a black child by way of manslaughter from their tear gas bombs. And so anybody that thought that they were absolved to this siege, they're not. Every demographic is represented in the tyranny and terror that these ICE people are committing. And so we're trying to pay remembrance to these people, acknowledgement of their lost souls, recognizing San Francisco or Bay Area solidarity with Minneapolis.
Yeah, I think it's imperative that I know it's a double-edged sword with technology, but to harness this to get out in the real world and to meet with ourselves so we can regulate as a community outside of these corporate constructs and outside of their narrative of binaries online of we're all monsters, this is all happening, and it's due process that what's happening is. So I think it's just really important. There's always been resistance. The Bay's always showed up to everything that's going on. And I implore you to please take the time out of your day to meet with your community members and recharge with us, to regroup with us, to share space so we can honor those that have been lost and recharge for what's to come.
And for all of our black and brown and indigenous relatives all across Turtle Island who've been suffering from this polarized terror, this is nothing new.
It's almost incidental at this point. There's very little staging opportunity in historically black and brown communities where you can't say somebody died 100, 200 feet away from here from the police. If we did it in the Mission, there would have been several bodies that we would have to acknowledge there. We'll be on Burno Hill, where we'll definitely pay acknowledgement to Alex Nieto and his loss there as gentrification pushed brown people out and criminalize the presence of brown people in favor of now we have a bunch of neo-colonists occupying San Francisco, Burno Hill. It's all just white yuppies now.
We're gathering at 5 p.m. The ceremony's going to start at 6 tonight on Burno Hill, Alex Nieto Hill.
Thank you, you guys, again, for standing up, for being in the community, remembering these fallen warriors. Again, we also know the lucrative business. This is not solely about immigration, right? This is about dollar signs. We know there's a lot of private detention centers opening up all over the U.S. And again, if it was about our folks being here illegally, they would release people and send them back home. But they're keeping them. They're making money off of people, off of children.
I've personally spent time in a privately owned prison, and you recognize how it incentivizes the population of prisoners, because who is building these prisons? Every time you have to build a prison, they contract that out to developers and real estate people, and then there's private contractors that accept these contracts on behalf of the government. They realize my building, my institution, sustained solely on the incoming of prisoners. So there's a quota to have X amount of prisoners. And if that were to lack, then there will be lobbyists that will try to lube the gears to make sure prisoners are reoccurring and that the cycle keeps going so that they can continue getting their money from the government. Same like Elon would do a bunch of dumb stuff to try to ensure that him and his brand are collecting big incentives and income from the government. They're just all exploiting our tax money to oppress us and uplift themselves.
Mike?
Yeah, definitely the intersections of all this. They want to compartmentalize this. I appreciate you mentioning that from everything from education to housing to the unhoused community to just like the immigration, police force, it's all separated in theory, but it's all connected. So I think it's imperative for us to connect those dots right now and even look at what's happening. As you mentioned, Stop Cop City, they're building it around us. If we look at the tech cities as well as Solano County with California Forever, they're trying to merge with the military and surveil and build a new system around us. It's the same thing. And I think as we connect the dots and show what's happening on that end of how they're trying to get us, it's imperative that we do the other side as well of all these different streams of resistance that we lead to a river of revolutionary optimism and we connect the dots on our side.
You brought up all the different communities that are being impacted. There are relatives from the continent, Somalia, that are now, they're beginning their new launch on in a territory that the settlers call Maine. And it's interesting to me because a lot of those kidnaps and abductions are quiet as kept. You're not even hearing about them. You're not even really seeing them. And I'm interested, too, around that the criminalization of blackness and even in movement spaces. And, you know, just as we're closing down, I wondered if you want to say anything about that, Mike or Doug.
Anti-blackness isn't solely relegated to the right or those that are explicitly embracing of white supremacy. There's anti-blackness in pretty much every space you go, including leftist spaces. So it's obviously a trend and it's obviously much present, but I think it's imperative that we start to recognize mechanisms that degrade the presence of Black self-determination, even in leftist spaces. So it's just something to be very conscious of.
It's bred in us from school all the way up to our jobs to, you know, it's just calling out everything that's going on. And the historical playbook is there's always a boogeyman. Colonial apparatus will always make every single one of us during each generation the boogeyman while they economically and policy driven on the other end exploit that end. So create the boogeyman, exploit, codify, transfer. So at the end of the day, we've seen this. And I think what's beautiful is how I appreciate you sharing the space like this in the digital world is we can create this message, connect those dots, bring these rivers together to show what's going on and show that, hey, we get it. It's here. It's the same playbook. We're just seeing it. And now we can talk about it versus just hearing about it. Make our own media, make our own impact, get outside of this and bring people in the real world and connect the dots.
I also want to say, you know, a lot of the times, you know, which we try to undo here at POUR, you know, this whole concept of bringing ceremony. We know that in vigils, and, you know, it brings people from different faith, spirituality, and again, sometimes in this activist movement, we don't move with prayer, with vigils, with ceremony that brings different people together that have different ways of thinking and practicing spirituality. But for us as POUR Magazine and Homefulness, we know this is important. As indigenous people, you know, we have always have our ceremonies, our vigils in our own ways. Can you guys speak about the importance about, you know, bringing that to some of these activism movements and spaces?
Go for it, Mike.
Yeah, I just want to shout out to a speaker I saw a couple years back that says, honor your rage. I always run on 1,000 miles an hour. And when they talk about to sustain ourselves and fill our cups so we can be here for the long run, I was on that operation just crash out. But we need everybody here. And in honoring yourselves, honoring these spaces, honoring indigenous practices, that's how we're going to sustain ourselves. That is so much needed. And I've never been modeled that. I was growing up in a colonial apparatus of Catholicism and the churches and stuff. And then I realized that who am I nourishing? How am I nourishing myself? And then if I'm in these streets going 1,000 miles an hour, I'm going to burn out. And you have modeled. And I just want to say I appreciate y'all because throughout all this resistance, y'all have set that precedent. You set that platform. And I'm getting healed daily. And I'm remembering I'm getting my download daily of what's really going down and how we can sustain ourselves. So it's so necessary. We need you. I know you feel powerless. I know this feels crazy. But at the end of the day, we're going to get through it together like we always have. There's always been resistance.
Doug or Mike, do you want to tell us what's happening on Friday? Just give a landscape and also to let relatives know we will be bringing our prayer in the form of danza, and also, as we say at POUR, the revolution will not be melted in a pot. Whether you pray to a church or you pray in Mama Earth, bring that spirit. But go ahead, relatives, tell us what's happening on Friday.
We're showing up, we're setting the ground, you know what I mean? We want it to be interactive. We're calling on the community members. Everybody plays a part. Educators, activists, whatever you identify as, this is a community space that we're bringing together. This isn't just sit and be passive by. We're doing this together organically. We're healing, we're setting precedent with prayer, foundation, and we're getting it outside of this corporate construct of, you know, we got something for you to hear. Nah, we're setting the space for us, for as a community.
We're if you have a compassionate heart and if you've been outside, we're all deeply messed up. And like, as Monday came in or as Sunday rolled out, like Saturday I was checked out. Sunday night I had to come to terms with reality in the evening. And it's just like we can all suffer in isolation and be disconnected from each other, or we can reorient, come together, pay respect to these martyrs and these people that lost their souls. And also, as a resistance community in the Bay Area, show historic solidarity with Minneapolis. We were there for them during George Floyd, and we will be here. We are still here for them during this ICE siege that they're incurring, and the lives they're losing. Baby Jackson and Renee Good and Alex Preddy, they are present with us as well. And so if you have, if you feel any impact from those losses and the terror that the community of Minneapolis is going through, and all of the others that are being detained and caged and terrorized and killed by this administration's ICE siege, then please come. This is a space where you'll be among people that have common love and compassion and interest in ending the terror that we're all witnessing together. After seeing Alex Preti executed, he's a white man. I saw myself, because if I were in that position, I wouldn't do a single thing different. And I know I could speak on behalf of Brother Mike. He wouldn't do a single thing different. Me and Mike will be outside with our cameras documenting their terror. Right. And God forbid they assault a woman in our presence. We will enact as a reflex. This is not even a choice for men like us. It's a natural reflex to be defensive of the women in our community. And we just seen that even a well-doing white man will be shot in his back for doing what occurs naturally to Samaritans. And so if that can happen to a white man, look at me, look at Mike, look at you guys. They're setting a precedence that we're all vulnerable to their fascism. They're doing a Nazi-style fascism siege right now.
F12 Unity, we have nothing but love, nothing but respect, and urge relatives to come out tonight on Bernal Hill. We're gathering at 5 p.m. The ceremony is going to start at 6. Join us in love and humility and prayer for Mother Earth and all of her relations. Thank you, family. We will talk to you very soon.
Mike. I'm for telling the truth, exposing the lies. Think about the dead soldiers when you're driving your ride. When people die for the war, and Daddy Bush's revenge. I'm with the widows, the children, and the lonely best friends. I'm for families staying together as one. I'm not for the raids and the deportations. I'm with Victor Toro and the MIR. So watch out for them snitches in that unmarked car. And for Lil Saulico, we gon' fight for your moms. So we gon' shout her out twice in one song. I'm for 12 million workers and Elvira Ariano. For a world without borders and a better tomorrow.
So that's all for this edition of Poor People's Radio. To get your complete podcast, go to Poor Magazine on SoundCloud or poormagazine.org or wherever you get your podcast from. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, X, Blue Sky, a Poor Magazine or a Poverty Scholar, or Poor News Network on YouTube. Gratitude to Anthony Fess, Anita Johnson, and David D for the media access. All power to the people.
Well, I don't know if I'm walking on solid ground.
You just don't go through with it. You say you know the way to go, and I should follow. But all of your empty promises leave me hollow. And oh, how do I trust you?
Maya,
who?
My last name is Susana.
couldn't keep me down.